I see it says recording started. Thank you, Michelle. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Owner's Box. I'm Billy Koch, founder and managing partner of Little Red Feather Racing Club. That is Spencer in your screen right now with the great and talented Michelle Yu. Michelle, go ahead, Spencer. Ask your question. It's just the beginning of the show.
He's sick today, so he doesn't feel good. He's in his jammies. All right.
He's a regular member of our show, so... We have a great show. We have John Stewart from Resolute Racing. This is going to be insane because I don't know what's happening on Twitter with him and Napoleon, but I'm going to ask him about it. Like, I don't
ask him at the end. I want to like talk about like, you know, our normal stuff first and then you can.
Okay. Here's what we're going to do though. I want to know who he is.
Pale today. I wonder if I can.
I want to know who he is, first of all. Like, how, like, where did he come from? Like, he just kind of showed up. I want to know that story. I want to know, you know, why he got into the game. I'm really interested in that. I want to know, and then I want to get into some of the things he's been talking about, especially on Twitter. And I want to find out if he thinks that's the real Mike Rapoli, because you know my thing.
I believe it. I know you don't. I have to believe that it is.
It's not. All right. Anyway, we have a fun show. John is going to call in any minute. Michelle, what is going on in the world of thoroughbred racing? It's got to be a lot of Derby action.
There's definitely some Derby action. First thing I thought was really interesting is that ECL Entertainment and Clairvest Group, which is Ron Winchell et al., have entered into an agreement to purchase Wyoming Downs, actually. And they currently own Kentucky Downs and run Kentucky Downs, which we know has, you know, huge racing. The big catalyst, in my opinion, behind this is because that Wyoming Downs has historical racing, right? So they also operate 18 off-track betting locations throughout the state. And Wyoming Down is the state's largest operator of historical horse racing. They had total handle last year of an excess of $892 million.
Wait a second. Is there an actual racetrack there?
Yeah. Yeah. So they race at Wyoming Downs. They just race like low-level horses. Ryan's been there. We've taken horses there. He says the track is actually really nice. He said the track can do like a one turn six furlongs. It's a big, you know, wide racetrack. It can hold like a good number of horses. They run a mixed meet right now, but if someone put some money into it, like Ron Winchell and them could, he said it could be a really nice spot to race. Like,
are they looking for a general manager? Maybe you and I go run Wyoming.
I would love to live in Wyoming. I don't know about you, but
get Josh Allen there.
I think it'd be awesome.
Jackson Hole, Wyoming?
No, it's Evanston, which is like hour and a half or so from Salt Lake City, Utah.
Okay. All right. So, well, that sounds good, anyway. Michelle. I like that. Good thing of note.
Also, let's see. Deterministic is officially out of the Kentucky Derby. Christophe Clement said that he's not going to be running him, but he is on deck for most likely the Peter Pan Stakes next time out.
Michelle, what if he was a Canadian horse? Where would he be?
I guess he'd be going to...
He'd be out.
Okay. Yeah, that's like... He'd be out. Is it out or out? That does allow Grand Mo the First, who was third place finisher in the Florida Derby, into the race. And other than that, we haven't seen too much other movement. I guess the other thing of note would be that Zidane did enter into a lawsuit against Churchill Downs, trying to have like an injunction to stop Churchill Downs banning Bob Baffert and allowing Muth to run in the Kentucky Derby. Right. And the judge said, no, that they will not allow that. I'm not sure if that's going to go to like the next level at the Supreme Court of Kentucky. But as of right now, that is what it is.
It is what it is. And by the way, I just want to say I have a house cottage in Canada. I'm a big Canada fan. I like running at Woodbine. I have a lot of friends that are Canadian. That was just a fun thing because of they say out.
Oh, was that supposed to be bad? Come on, it wasn't bad.
I don't
know.
I think it was. I think, you know, the woke, if the
woke people, don't listen to our show.
No, you're right.
I don't think you can listen to our show if you're woke.
You cannot listen to our show if you're woke. Yeah.
Yeah, you can't. And just a real quick wrap up from the OBS sale. I thought it was very, very strong. Even the last day, we had several high-priced horses. I believe the sales topper was the $1.9 million for Michael Lund Peterson, right?
Yep, Tom McCrothlin.
Yep.
My man.
So there, and you guys got a horse.
Got a really nice filly, yeah. Her name's Innovation, and she's like Complexity, and she's beautiful.
I think we were on that horse, too. Yes.
She's a rocket ship. Yeah, I think you were, because I kept seeing Ryan bid against us on all our horses. So we had similar tastes.
We did this time. It doesn't always happen.
No, we were always in that like 200 range. You know, that's the range we were all in. And you know, I thought there was a little bit of a middle market. You had to just know which one you were going to try to really get. And that was the one we wanted. So she's already out in Southern California. So
excellent.
We'll see what happens. Yeah, got to reload.
She D'Amato bound or D'Amato ensconced?
She's D'Amato ensconced. And so we're rooting for the belt to win the Kentucky Derby with Stronghold, who had a really nice work over the weekend. So there were a lot of workers. And I'm going to do this year. I'm going to do a new thing. Watch this.
Okay.
Boop. Look at this. I can't hear you. I can't hear if your horse is working well or not. Yeah. It's like every horse is working great. Couldn't be doing any better. You know what? I'm throwing all that out the window this year.
What are you going to use? What are you going to use the handicap?
I don't know. I'm gonna get the sheets probably tonight and start looking. Okay. And I'm going to go old fashioned form and use some video and maybe do some pace handicapping. I feel like
post position draw is going to be really important this year.
100%. Right? Yeah, because Fierceness has to get a good post.
Yeah.
To me, at a short price, he is an absolute toss. I'm telling you that right now. I will not have him on any of my tickets especially if he's like down on the inside or something, or way on the outside. I feel like I'm leaning to like the Sierra Leone Catching Freedom train.
I don't want to talk about that, but did you see the still photo of his work where he's like
Sierra Leone?
Yeah.
He's like Godzilla.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's like,
you know what's funny though is he doesn't, like, when you watch him run, he doesn't look fast.
No,
right? Like, he's gobbling the ground, but he's like boom 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 boom, like he's a plow horse looking thing.
Yeah, I talked to Chad Brown. Actually, he was on my flight, he was right behind me on my flight from Ocala back to Keeneland, and we started talking about him and started saying, like, I said my first line was, I think he has a better chance than Zandon did. And he said, you're right. And I was like, okay, one for one. I said, and I think he's like, you know, the bluegrass curse. You know, I said, I think he's different than Tappet Trice. I said, I think Tappet Trice was more of a grinder, whereas I think this horse is actually, he doesn't look great, but he's more of an athlete. Like, I think he's just like, he's a little gangly, but he's not a plotter. I mean, he really makes up ground. And he said, yeah, he said, I agree with that. He said, he, like any come from behind horse, he's going to have trip, right? And hopefully he can just be in the clear. And when Tyler Gaffleon gets him going, he'll start rumbling home. I mean, certainly the distance is not going to be a problem. That's the one thing with the Derby you have to always kind of take into consideration is who actually wants to go a mile and a quarter. Mm-hmm. Speaking of Derby, Michelle, did you see that we retired Benedict Cannon and that she's going to the Derby last year? Mage.
I did. Look at how my tan line. Where did that come from?
I mean, seriously, what is wrong with you?
I don't know.
People who are listening to this on the pod are like, what the fuck?
Look at that. Where did that tan line come from?
You have guns. Can we see your guns?
I don't have guns. None. I'm strong to like hold something and pick it up, but I don't have like muscles sticking out like Jess Pfeiffer does.
She's pretty ripped.
Yeah, she is.
What's coming up at let's talk about Santa Anita really quick since we're waiting for John.
Oh, well, one last thing I just want to mention was we did have the PDJF telethon this weekend, which was run by Mike Joyce, and he did such a stellar job getting all those riders in and all the people that donated. They raised almost $400,000.
That's incredible. That's a big deal.
And speaking of John, guess who's here? Right on time.
Sure. All right, here we go. There he is.
Hi, John.
Hi, John. John, can you hear us? We can hear you. We can hear you. We can hear you. We can now. You're muted. All right, back here with John Stewart. John, first of all, thank you for coming into Horse Racing. I don't know if you know about this show or myself or Michelle. We didn't have a lot, I'm sure you didn't have a lot of time to prep. We keep it real positive. We have a lot of fun. And just like what you've brought to the game, I want to first say thank you.
Well, thanks for that. Yeah, I'm just happy to be a part of it all.
Just for the people who don't really know much about you, and I'm going to be honest, I didn't do a lot of background homework for today. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how, you know, where you came from, because it's like all of a sudden you rolled in big time. But what happened before that? Where are you from? What did you do? What's going on? Tell us a little bit about John Stewart.
Well, I'm from the local area here in Lexington, Kentucky. So I've been in Lexington for over 30 years. I grew up in a small town in Kentucky, and I started my career working for Toyota Motor Corporation as an hourly line worker on the night shift. And over an 18-year career, I ended up running Toyota's European operations, and got my degree while I was working at Toyota. And then I got recruited 17 years ago by a private equity firm that was buying industrial companies and was looking for somebody that knew how to like improve the efficiency of the plants. And Toyota is kind of world renowned for the Toyota production system. So I actually authored a book on like how to make your factory more efficient and did a lot of public speaking. And so I went into private equity 17 years ago and never been to New York City before going to the interview for the job.
Really?
And ended up getting hired, was there for 10 years and became a partner in the firm. And then decided in 2017 that I wanted to do something for the Lexington area. You know, I was still living in Lexington. I was commuting to New York and we had a small office here and we were buying industrial companies and it was really working well. But I wanted to do something to keep the really smart and talented people that lived in Lexington from moving to the big cities and moving outside to get jobs in finance. And so I headquartered my firm in Lexington, Kentucky. Everybody told me I wouldn't be successful. They told me that, you know, you'll never be successful. You don't have a finance degree. You know, you don't, there's no private equity firms in the whole state of Kentucky, let alone in Lexington. Your name's terrible. I named my firm Middle Ground Capital because I like to fish in the Florida Middle Grounds. And people like, that sounds like middle of the road capital. Your logo's a fish. It's stupid, you know, and, you know, and maybe they were right. Cause you know, when I started my firm, I took 350 meetings with investors to get 22 people to say yes. And so my investors are like large institutional people, insurance companies, retirement funds. And, sure. And so we buy, industrial assets on behalf of those, companies. Now we have three offices, around the world. We just opened an office in Amsterdam. We have about $4 billion of assets that we manage for our clients. And we have owned companies, industrial companies, with over 180 facilities all over the world.
Wow. I mean, that was a mouthful. Are you here in Lexington right now?
Yeah, I'm in Lexington. This is our headquarters. I'm here now.
Oh, me too. I'm right here. We did literally. I'm like,
you guys could have done it together. Now, wait, but none of that had to do with horse racing except for being in Lexington.
Correct.
Yeah. So like, you know, so I moved to Lexington when I went to work at Toyota and, you know, started going to Keeneland like everybody did, you know, and like when we had a basketball season as bad as ours was at UK this year, like everybody, like we lost in the first round. Everybody's like, oh, well, Keeneland starts soon. So we had something to look forward to. And, right. You know, always look forward to Keeneland. It's just like the, you know, it's kind of the, you know, the start of the spring and the season. You know, to go out to Keeneland and started as a horse player, you know, started mm-hmm. like, you know, betting on the horses. And, you know, I'm not one of these guys that like bets online. I don't do any online sports. I don't have Twin Spires or any of that. You know, I just like to go to the tracks and bet. And I'll usually, you know, so you're probably talking five or six times a year, you know, that I would like, you know, really, but I'm a big data guy. So I always like get into the data and, you know, mm-hmm. all of that kind sure. of, you know, information and, you know, and, you know, breeding is a big part of the horse play, being a horse player. Like, you know, you look at like the breeding, you know, like the horse players know that, you know, like, you know, what are the win percentages of, you know, Justify colts on dirt on, you know, this occasion and, yep. you know, like this type of condition and against this, you know, so all of that data, I really enjoy like that part of the game. And so I got into it as a horse player and, you know, and as a horse player, you know, I started to see, you know, I was at the Kentucky Derby and I was holding winning tickets, which would have been winning the tickets when Medina Spirit got disqualified. And, you know, and so, you know, I left kind of a little disenfranchised, right, with the sport. I had won really big, you know, at the Oaks and on Derby Day and had bet like $40,000 on the race. You know, to end up, I have the winning tickets, but like, I can't collect them because it's pari-mutuel. And once the collections went out, like there's nothing you can do. So the horse gets disqualified. I got the winning tickets. There's nothing you can do about it. Sure. And then, you know, there was, you know, some of the negative publicity about some of the things with like horses breaking down and different things going on in the industry. And I know people that are in the industry. And so I had a friend that I had met. He was actually dating one of my employees. And he was a bloodstock agent, Gavin O'Connor. He really was like trying to be a bloodstock agent, but he was actually the stallion pilot. That's the correct term. The first podcast, I called it the penis inserter, you know, at the farm.
That's okay. You can say that on us.
I didn't know what the name was.
Like, you get rid of it. You can say anything you want, John.
Right? Like, good. Like what would you call it? Like, that's what he did. Like, and so
the helper.
I know that the proper helper. Term is stallion pilot, right? Yeah. And so you
didn't use it like.
You didn't, want to clean Gavin's shoes at the end of the day. Let's put it that way.
No.
You know, like, and.
So what was the, hey, John, so I think I know where you're going, but like, so what was the conversation with Gavin to say to you, John, hey, maybe you should do something here. Maybe you should become an owner, or what was the conversation?
Yeah. So I'm going to give you all the true story. It's like kind of funny. So I wanted to buy a horse with him. You know, we were talking, I was like, oh, that'd be cool. So he goes to the September sale in 2021. And he finds a horse, and I was married at the time, but I'd been married for 33 years. And my ex-wife said, you know, we don't need a horse. Like you don't need to buy a horse. So I didn't buy the horse. So Gavin had went out and he'd like told everybody he was going to buy a horse. And then we didn't buy a horse. And he was kind of mad at me. He was like, oh, you really ruined my credibility and like all this kind of stuff. So, you know, I paid him like a, you know, whatever his like commission he would have lost was. And we went on. And then I ended up, my wife left me. So I called Gavin and said, hey, let's go buy a horse. And true story. And so in 2022, he bought Shiloh's Mistress for me. It was Vina Rosa, filly that ran on Saturday, got second to grade three out of Santa Anita.
How about this far?
Great race. And so, you know, this year, and so I met my girlfriend, Chelsea. She used to work at Gainesway. And you know, the idea was her and Gavin were going to pick out a few more horses at Keeneland this year. We're going to get a little bit more into it, but you know, people that know me know I don't get a little into anything, you know, like, you know, I got into like tropical fish and I ended up with like a 900 gallon aquarium and was like flying in, you know, like shrimp.
He's like, I own an orca. I live in my backyard.
I don't do anything. And everybody.
Now the ADHD world, we call that hyperfixation.
Yeah, it is. I'm a little, I definitely have like a little ADHD going on. And so when I do fixate on something, you know, I go all the way in. And so I told him before the sale, I'm like, you know, there's a good chance that I probably will make a larger investment in the industry. Like, you know, I don't do anything halfway. I'm kind of excited about it. And so it was the first sale that I attended. So I went to the September yearling sale and I think we bought 8 on the first day. And so we got a little bit more into, you know, buying the horses and, you know, thought we were going to accelerate it. You know, I stopped investing in public markets. So, you know, I'm a private equity investor. So I have a lot of my wealth tied up in the companies that I, you know, buy on behalf of my investors because I invest alongside them. And, you know, I decided like the public market risk was not something that I really wanted to take. It was too volatile. So I'd taken a lot of like my capital out of the public markets and I had a lot of capital to kind of deploy into like alternatives. And so, you know, I started collecting art and a car collection. And then, you know, I started to make the initial investment, you know, in the industry as like just as an investor. And then, you know, once I kind of made that kind of large, you know, step into it, you know, I started to assemble a team, you know, and so, you know, I own 19 different companies in the industrial world. Right.
Sure.
And so I don't run them on a daily basis. So I have CEOs that run them and everything. So the same thing with the horse business, you know, like, you know, the horses are kind of like my grandkids. Like I go out there and I play with them and I feed them treats, but like, I'm not the person that's like taking care of them. you know, like I'm, you know, I don't know that part of it, but what I do know how to do is like when I buy companies, you know, I might not know the market very well that those companies are in, but I, you know, partner with like executive teams at these companies that know, you know, how to do that very well. And I am a really good judge of like talent. And then also just my business acumen brings a lot to the table because, you know, I've done this for like 17 years. And so I'm approaching this endeavor the same way. And so I've, you know, assembled a really, you know, really good experienced management team that manages kind of the day to day of like what we are doing. And then, you know, I'm providing the you know, capital and strategic advice to the team.
That's a good way to go through it. Michelle.
So John, just because you are an investment guy and you said you had this capital to work with, do you look at racing as an investment or is it just a hobby that you have?
No. Like, and anybody that knows me, like, you know, I mean, it's already being run like a business. We've already, you know, we've got mm-hmm. 7 horses running. Every horse isn't running in stakes races, mm-hmm. right? Wow. You know, yeah. So like, you know, it's not like, and that's not a fluke, right? You know, so there was a lot of research that's gone into, and I have like a, you know, the team has developed a proprietary system that we use for selecting the horses that we're buying. And it's based on like their on the track performance and their, you know, their historical breeding, you know,
analysis. So you've been using data. It's data.
Oh yeah. I would say that like, and you know, look, I've talked to a lot of people in the industry that are, you know, like very good, solid players. And, you know, if you've seen the movie kind of Moneyball, you read the book, you know, like what we're doing is very similar.
John, you're talking to Billy Bean here.
Yeah. So it's very similar. So, you know, like the every horse that we buy is strategic. We don't buy a filly or a mare that we don't want to breed long-term. So like any horse, like people will see me buying like Sweet Rebecca. You know, I bought her after she broke her maiden. And but I was not evaluating her as just a filly that was going to mm-hmm. run and maybe do well on the track. Once I saw how she ran and then looked at her in my system and saw that she matched up with my, you know, future, you know, kind of like what I think the significant families are going to be on a go forward basis from a breeding and bloodstock standpoint, you know, then I acquired her. And because I looked at her through that lens, I was willing to acquire her maybe at a higher price than someone would just on the racing stock alone. And the way that I'm looking at it is if I can take a horse out of the system before they get through their career, then nobody else is ever going to have an opportunity to buy the horse. And I'm maybe going to pay more than I would just on the racing stock alone, but I'm going to pay a discount to what I would pay if the horse performs and then has to pay at the end. So it's a very calculated risk that I'm taking.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So talk a little bit about your plan as you move through. Are you assembling a broodmare band? Are you planning on keeping the babies? We know, you know, I remember back in the day when Jess Jackson first got in the business, he was big into keeping the fillies and selling the colts at public auction so people had a chance to get those Stone Street bred, that kind of thing. Is there a plan for Resolute Racing in that regard?
Yeah. Yep. So, you know, I want at the end of the day, and, you know, look, we're already getting there. I'm really excited for April 24th that's coming up because I've got I've made another global acquisition that is like people are just going to wonder how in the heck that I pulled that off. And I can't announce it until then.
Can you give us a hint? Can we get it like a
hint? Okay, now to be fair, we're recording this the 22nd.
We're not going to put this up.
We'll release it until you tell us.
Yeah, I don't know. It tells me we're live right now, so I don't know.
No, we're not live.
No, it's recorded. We don't do anything live. We don't believe in live here.
No live.
But anyway, maybe I should keep to myself, and I will let you guys know a little bit about it. But anyway, so, you know, I want to assemble the best band of broodmares on the planet. Right. Okay. And like, I've already went to Japan and bought a horse and bringing it back to the States. I've been to Australia. I've already bought horses there that I intend, you know, to have back here in my band. I've already been to Europe and, you know, and I've made, you know, multiple acquisitions in Europe of horses that are coming back. And I'm looking, you know, when you go to the auctions here and you look at the pedigree pages, you know, we're lacking a lot of depth because we've exported a lot of our really good bloodstock. And so, you know, I went up against like the Japanese and some of the other big buyers and paid some big prices, you know, as really as like, as a message to the market that like those days are over when you're just going to come over here and have carte blanche on the best mares. You know, you're going to run against me now. And the same with the Winx filly down in Australia. That was more of me sending a message again that, you know, the I'm going to own the mares that I want to own. Right. Sure. I'm happy for everybody else to have leftovers. Like I'm going to own them.
You know, that's an interesting thing. And I want to make kind of a strangely global statement here, because you come into this game guns blazing and there's a lot of people in this industry that'll be like, oh, here's this guy. Doesn't really know that much. He's coming in here and he's puffing his chest out and he's spending his money and he'll be gone in a year, right? How do you just come in with the blinders on and the earmuffs on and say, "You listen, I'm from Lexington. I'm here to stay. I believe in horse racing. Shut the F up."
Here's the thing. I'm the guy that everybody told that I couldn't start a private equity firm in Lexington, Kentucky. And I had 300 and out of 350 meetings, I had 330 people tell me no, they weren't going to invest with me. Sure. And I'm sitting here with $4 billion of assets and, you know, 100 plus employees on, you know, multiple continents.
Yeah, so you just don't care.
I don't care. It fuels me. Like, I want them all to be against me. I want everybody to be against me. I've been underestimated my whole life. You know, when I went to New York, the first annual meeting we had with investors, because it was a typical New York private equity firm, they had a slide where they made fun of me being from Kentucky. They were like, yes, he wears shoes. No, he doesn't wear straw hats.
You have your name on your belt.
Look, I let them all laugh up until the point I took 18 of their employees and started my own firm and raised more capital than they did in 10 years and 3 years. Right. So, underestimate me. That's okay. Like, you know, there's a lot of people, you know, that can underestimate you. And that's a great thing that people will think that. But, sure. You know, people told me that, look, John, you got to be careful about making these statements. People will bid you up. If you go back and look at my auction history, most of my bids are one bid.
Yeah. Yep.
Nobody's bidding me up because they know once I bid, I'm not stopping.
Yeah.
And if you want to get hung up with the bet, like look at what happened with the Winx filly lady. Yeah. You know, she was bidding me up, she got stopped at 10 million. She owns it, you know.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. I know Michelle has a question. Go ahead, Michelle.
Do you have a farm right now?
Yeah. Yeah. I bought the old Shadwell farm that was owned by the Crown Prince of Dubai. Mm-hmm. So it was 850 acres and I've already acquired the farm next to it. So everybody thinks I'm going to flame out. I'm just must be a really big idiot because I haven't bought the next farm. So I got
Are you breaking all your own on the farm?
Huh?
Are you breaking all your own on the farm then?
No, we're not breaking yet. I'm going to build a world-class training facility in Lexington, like it should have been done long ago. And, I'm in the process of planning for that. And, you know, I'm going to change the whole game up because eventually I'm going to have my own trainer, like similar to the Ballydoyle situation. Mm-hmm. I think there's just too much variability when I have to hand off to a farm to break them and then, hand off to different trainers. And like, there's just not enough, you know, control over the overall process. And so long term, you know, I want to take out, I think we'll still use multiple trainers in the long term, but, you know, I want to have more control over that process. And I want to have more facilities here in the local area. I'm trying to make, you know, first of all, I want to make horse racing in Kentucky better. That's my number one goal. Right. And then in North America better. And then globally better. Right. But I want to focus on Lexington because it's so important part of the Kentucky economy. It's so important. And I've gotten so much out of this community. You know, I want to like give back, you know, by, participating in this industry and being able to do this. So I have my own farm. And you asked what my plans are. My plans are to have the best brood mares. And we already have, I think I've got 32 brood mares right now. So I had one horse in September and I think I have like 117 or something like that now. So, you know,
hey, John,
I bought horses for $6 million and I bought horses for $8,000, like, you know, all over the spectrum.
Big range. Hey, John, John Stewart joining us here on the Owner's Box from Resolute Racing. So let me ask you this. If you asked a general public, they would say horse racing is going down. It's a dying game. It's seen its heyday. Yet here you are with all this ammunition and excitement and passion. You're very much like me and Michelle. I mean, this is why we do this show, is to talk to people like yourself. And we love having people like you in the game. How do we find more people like you into this game? How do we spread that word that it's not on the decline? We're getting people like John Stewart involved.
Well, let's not spread the word just yet. Let me take advantage of the market being depressed right now.
And then we'll
spread the word at the right time. I'm trying to do things to make people excited about the industry. You know, some of the things we're doing on social media, I'm trying to demystify it. I did a live stream of, you know, when Pizza Bianca had her foal, did a 48-minute live stream that people wanted, you know, me to do until the foal stood up. I did a farm tour live stream yesterday, offered to do, you know, live streams of like our strategy sessions. And, you know, I'm going to the Kentucky Derby, you know, draw event, and I'm going to be live streaming that. You know, awesome. I'm trying to give access to people. And I think that creates excitement, right? When people get access. The industry has been very secretive, right? It is very secretive. And like, you know, people don't want to openly talk about and discuss things. And, you know, people that know me, like I'm transparent almost to a fault. And, I like to put it all out there. I think we're all adults and we can all deal with it. What I would say to people is, go back and look at look at Formula One in 2016 when it was acquired by Liberty Media. It was declining. They didn't have young people engaged. And now look at it today. And so, you know, there's a pattern that's there, for us to look at. And there's some lessons learned. And then F1 looked at the NFL. Look at what was going on with NFL and concussions, at its kind of low, right? And the strikes that they were having and the, you know, the substitute players and, you know, the, you know, all that kind of, and then the bad actors on the athlete side of things. And, you know, look, people can think what they want of Roger Goodell, but the owners love Roger Goodell. Look at what they've done for the franchises.
It makes a lot of money for them. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. And so we've seen the NFL kind of revamp itself and reimage itself. And we've seen Formula One racing do the same thing. And you know how both of them did it? The number one thing they did is they focused on how to engage with the fans in the way that the fans wanted engagement.
Yeah.
Right. And so we've got to open our eyes to that from a horse racing standpoint. You know, just, you know, no knock on Churchill Downs, but like, you know, they've got all these hats that say 150th Kentucky Derby. Like, you know, so we're taking hats and we got Just a Touch in the Derby and we're embroidering Just a Touch on the side. Right. Yeah. You can come and you can wear a Just a Touch hat if that's what you want to do. I think like that's a huge like marketing initiative that like people, already, you know, wouldn't it be cool? I mean, it's fun to watch everybody dress up funny, you know, in these funny outfits for the Derby. But you know, what'd be cooler is if people showed up wearing Resolute Racing, you know, jerseys with the names of the horses on them. And, you know, with their hats and like all of their gear and stuff, you know, and, you know, if you supported Mike Rapoli, you could come up in Rapoli gear. If you supported, you know, Bob Baffert or whoever you wanted, you know, whatever the names are, you could have like their gear and you could show up. You could have that interactive experience with them, you know. I don't think too many
people will be supporting Baffert at the Derby, John. I'm just throwing that out there.
I just met Bob a couple times, and you know, like I said, I was holding the wrong end of the ticket, but I don't know whether you know he said.
We're fans of Bob on the show. We're fans.
I can't judge all the trainers, you know, based on things. Sorry, I'm just trying to get the sun out of my eye.
That's okay.
I can't judge them based on things that they've done in the past. But like what I've told all of my trainers, if you do it going forward and you do it with one of my horses, you're not going to worry about the jockey club or HISA. Like if you give my horse something you're not supposed to give it, you're going to better be worried about me. You know, I'm from Lexington, right? You know how we'll solve problems. Like, absolutely. You know.
I want to know what trainers do you use? Obviously, we know Michael McCarthy because he is out here in Southern California and you were out here this week for the Providencia. Who else do you utilize?
So I've got Mike McCarthy. I've got Chad Brown has a couple of horses for us. I've got Mark Cassie. Mm-hmm. I've got Bill Mott, Brad Cox, Mike Maker. And we just gave a horse to Kenny McPeak. Mm-hmm. And I just gave I'm giving a Justify colt to Riley Mott.
There you go.
Great.
Get a youngster involved. Now a lot of those people are East Coast trainers. John, you were out at Santa Anita. I saw the interview you did and it, you know, beautiful facility, but we are, listen, we're not going to, you talk about
sugarcoating it. We're struggling in Southern California.
California's struggling right now. What about possibly sending some more horses out there to California, where even though the purses are lower, there's plenty of chances and opportunities?
Yeah, look, I'm sending some to Mike McCarthy, but you know, there's another problem that needs to get addressed. Sorry, my blinds are going crazy on me.
No, you look great.
And one of those problems is the backside of the tracks. I've got a real problem that I've got to solve in the short term. I'm not okay with my horses being at the trainers and being stuck in their, in the paddocks. There's no paddocks for them to go out, and they're stuck in the barns for 23 hours a day. Yeah. I'm just not okay with that. I don't think that's a good situation. And so, you know, I've got to figure out a solution for that. It's just not at Santa Anita, you know, or, you know, the tracks out there, it's everywhere. But, you know, I'm going to have to like lease farm space in these areas where, you know, our horses can go, you know, even if it's like, you know, the, you know, 1 or 2 days a week, you know, to get out of that environment.
Just let me know.
Just call Michelle. She's got contacts for that.
Yeah, no, I mean, I love going out to Santa Anita. It's beautiful. You know, I really enjoyed it. I went to the Breeders' Cup. It was my first time there. And so, you know, I have found it to be fun, an engaging environment. You know, but California, Michelle, sorry, but California is making it hard to do any business in California. You know, I own businesses out there. And so, you know, what's going on with horse racing is kind of following, you know, what's going in other businesses out there. And so, you know, there's a real kind of, you know, California issue on trying to like make it hard to do business, you know, and so the horse racing is just kind of getting caught up in all of that. It's kind of a shame from like that perspective, because you know, I think that there is a pretty nice racing community there. And I think there could be a lot of work to engage that population base to have better attendance, you know, at those races. I think, you know, doing some of the things that, for example, that Gulfstream has done with Pegasus, you know, to make it more appealing to young people, like having, you know, Calvin Harris come in and do a concert, you know, at the track, and doing some things that will, you know, engage young people to come out, teaching them. You know, at the Gulfstream, I was so impressed in the area where they had like Calvin Harris all through the day. They had DJs, but they also had like instructions on how to make an exacta bet, how to make a trifecta bet, how to make
that
a
was me.
Superfecta. Yeah,
that was Michelle. You just
I was up there doing that, talking to people.
It's awesome.
I have one other kind of fluffy question. You have purchased so many really nice horses. And obviously I think Goodnight Olive is a fan favorite. I love that you paraded her at Keeneland. Who's your favorite horse that you have purchased?
You put him on the spot, Michelle.
Oh no, that's easy. I mean, right now it's Goodnight Olive. And it's just because she stands as a symbol, you know, for what I'm trying to do in racing. You know, she would have been in Japan. Like Yoshida would have had her if it hadn't been for me, and nothing against them. You know, but like, you know, she's ours and you can't have her, you know, it's her that is, you know, really, the kind of my number one, like if there's somebody gets a special treat when I go to the barn, you know, one more extra one, it's Olive.
John, I love listen, that.
You brought up some of the stuff on social media and I want to get to aftercare in a minute. But I couldn't not do this interview and bring up what's happening between you and Mike Rapoli on social media. I am a believer that I don't think it's Mike Rapoli, but I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy. Why take the time to go back and forth with this stuff in such a strange place on Twitter, where it's this like kind of unseemly battleground between two guys who could be titans of this industry, rather than, it just seems so strange to me. I don't know. Can you talk us a little bit about it?
Sure. Well, I mean, look, first of all, I think me and Mike Rapoli both have said on Twitter that neither one of us take this very seriously. Like we're not like insulted by what we're doing to one another. Okay. And you know, if you saw my Twitter today, like I did text him personally, and he's supporting my aftercare project. We're working together on that. So he made a sizable donation, you know, to that and said that he would love to come, but he's just too busy, you know? And so, you know, I think like, you got to take Twitter for what it is. Right. And, you know, people like to see that, like that kind of, that's how people engage on Twitter. Right. It's, you know, it's Mark Zuckerberg and Elon Musk, you know, challenging themselves to a fight. Right. You know, they didn't actually have a fight, but people talked about it and, you know, they, you know, it's how people like engaged on the subject. And so,
it is a little tongue in cheek is what we're saying.
Yeah. But there's some seriousness behind it because, you know, like I have a differing view on some of these issues, you know, sure. And, you know, I do find it comical that he did a poll and I think he got like 90 votes and made himself the commissioner, you know,
we've laughed at that. I still don't understand that.
Yeah. I do have a fundamental problem, you know, with what he did at the Eclipse Awards. You know, yeah. I was there. You know, and it's not that his message is the wrong message, right? And but as a leader, like if you're going to make yourself the commissioner, that and if you go back to the very beginning of my like riff with him, you mm-hmm. know, it was like if you're going to call yourself the commissioner, you've got to be clear with your message. Like
you kind of act like a commissioner.
Yeah, you can't come out and say I'm against OBS breezing sale. I'm not going to OBS, and then 2 days later say, oh, now we're going to go, but we're only buying horses that gallop. Well, you knew that you could only bought horses at the beginning that gallop, right? It sounds like you and your team aren't on like a good page and you haven't like worked together to talk about it. You know, like, you need to really think through like the message and the power of your words if you're putting yourself out there as someone that you want other people to follow. And so that was kind of what my message back to him was, you know, that. And then he went on the Big John campaign and, you know, telling me that he was going to give me a tour of the Winner's Circle when my horse had actually beat his horse, you know, in the Here Comes the Bride.
It just seems so strange. Do you understand? So for us, you know, and we've been in the game for a long time, it just seems so strange to have these two guys on this in this like Twitter beef.
Maybe you guys are the young guys. Like kid. We just wouldn't have like Jess Jackson and.
We're not taking it too serious. I mean, there's a lot of followers on both sides that take it a lot more seriously. And I got in between a couple of them last night and said, okay, guys, this has gone far enough. Let's pick another topic to argue about.
Well, this is you on your phone. This is actually you responding.
Yeah, it's all me. Yeah. Wow. No, I have someone that does social media for like the Resolute Racing and for Instagram and Facebook. But no, the Twitter's me. It's actually me. And if you notice, it's generally like nights and weekends because I get slammed by people all the time. They're like, he didn't reply to my text. I'm like, I got a job, guys. Like, I don't sit on Twitter.
Along those lines, let me ask one, because we talk about commissioner, we're talking about, you know, you really getting involved in this game. Would you be opposed to joining some of these boards, whether it's TOBA or, you know, the Jockey Club, or where you really can't get on?
Absolutely. If I was asked, I didn't come into sport to be like a leader. I came into sport to take action and I believe the best way to like address the problems is take action against the problems. And sure. So I'm already like taking action in things that I'm doing that I don't, you know, appreciate like in the industry. So for example, like all of my staff on the farm, they all have health insurance.
Great.
Everybody, 100% nice. Health insurance. Like, okay. You know, that's like a big issue like out there.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I put that in place, for all of my employees. I actually provide lunch for all my employees. Awesome. I do it at my firm and I do it at the farm as well. And so, you know, I'm the person that started as an hourly worker. When I buy a company, the first thing I do is look at the restrooms inside the factory. Right. And usually like the CEO, you don't want to go in that one. We can take you up front to a bathroom. I'm like, no, I want to go. And usually I don't have to go to the bathroom. Yeah. I'm just going in there because I see how the management thinks of their people by how they have the restrooms and the cleanliness of them and what the status of them is for the people that are actually doing the work. And like at our farm, you know, some of the first areas that are getting upgraded at the farm are the area for the grooms inside the facility. And they're nice areas now, but I want them to be really nice because I want to set the quality mindset with them from the time they enter, you know. Like I don't have like a lot of logo stuff, but everybody on the farm has it, you know? And so like I told like the leadership team, like you don't get like the hat and the jackets and all that stuff until everybody on the farm has it. So, you know, we bought boots for our people, which, you know, is a big expense for like a groom. And we did those things. And so I'm trying to do the right thing by my farm. I'm trying to do the right thing by my horses. I'm trying to like, you know, tackle the things that I can through the actions that I'm taking, you know, in the industry. And I think that sends a more clear message. Like, I'm not just trying to talk about what needs to be done. You know, a lot of people were talking about aftercare.
Yeah, you're actually doing it.
Let's go raise $200,000 for aftercare. You know, yeah. I've got some poker tables. I can hold 40 people. We threw it together. You know, everybody's coming together. A lot of, you know, Micropoli's now supporting, and other people, you know, from, you know, the industry are supporting it. We're raising $200,000 for aftercare in just a couple of weeks' work. You know, so if me being on Twitter gives me a forum to do something like that, to do good, you know, I want to do good with it. If you look at like 95% of my content, you know, outside of the Rapoli stuff, like, it's very positive comment about the industry. And yeah. I would just like him, you don't see Roger Goodell getting on television or Twitter and talking about all the problems in the NFL.
Right.
No.
Right.
Not at
so
all.
If you want to be a leader, there's problems, and it's not about not talking about the problems. It's about talking about the industry in general. There's a lot of good things that are going on in the industry, you know, and we should talk about those good things just as well. But we should address the problems. And, you know, I use the term takers. There's a lot of takers, and you're from the local area here. You know that as well. You know, there's a lot of foreign owners that have bought farms in Lexington, and they haven't been here since COVID. And those farms, because I toured a bunch of them when I was looking to buy one, like, some of them would need $15 or $20 million put into them just to keep them up to the, you know, working level. Mm-hmm. And it's just a shame, you know, that those, you know, beautiful properties are not being upheld, you know. And so it's one of the reasons I wanted to buy a farm and show that commitment, is because it's real easy to say, well, you don't have the infrastructure of a farm, so you can say all these things, you know, and you know, point out things. So I want to be a real participant.
Yeah, you're going to learn all about it. Michelle.
I want to go back to what you're talking about and the charity poker tournament, because obviously I saw that. The minute I saw that, I was on the horn to Billy. He's the president of Karma, which is our California retirement program out here. I'm like, you need to send something in. So can you just tell us a little bit about the idea behind it and what anyone can do to participate or be helpful for it?
Yeah. So any of the, if you're 501 or 501c3, you know, authorized aftercare, if you will reach out to Tess@resracing.com, or you can on Twitter, you can, or Instagram, you can message us on any of the accounts. And what we're doing is we're going to pick 20 aftercare groups and probably, you know, try not to, you know, some of the mainline groups that get a lot of the money already, try to get some of the other groups that do a lot of good work and just don't, you know, they're not on the radar to get these funds. And we're going to have 40 people playing. Everybody's
Billy
donating 5,000. Huh?
I'm a terrible person. No, you don't want me. I'll be out.
Yeah, you can come play. But it's $5,000. I'll donate the money if you want to come play. But it's $5,000 a seat. And so we're going to raise $200,000. We're going to pick 20 groups, and each one of the, there'll be two people playing for a team, right?
Okay.
And so everybody will get at least $5,000, and then the winner could get, I think it's like $35,000 or $40,000, and then it'll go down, you know, and it'll scale. That's but scary. Everybody will get at least $5,000.
Like, if you play for Karma, if you won all the money,
whatever you win goes to Karma. The players get nothing. Like, okay, they may give him a trophy, right, or something.
Billy, I'm going to send Ryan out to play in your place then for Karma.
Yeah, okay? Ryan's good. I laugh at poker. I'm not a good poker player. It's not my strength, John.
I've got all these under the same color. Is that good?
Yeah, exactly. No, I know how to play, Michelle. John Stewart. I'm going to finish this because we've been talking for a long time. And first of all, let me tell you, we appreciate all your time.
Yes.
What is the one thing you've learned since you started that if you could kind of go back in time a little bit and say, ooh, maybe I should do this differently?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think at this point, it's like early days for me. I think that, you know, look, I'm really enjoying the ride right now. And, you know, I wish I would have maybe started more of the engagement earlier in the process. Mm-hmm. You know, I think, you know, like some of the things that I did, like we bought the horse at OBS sale, the Authentic Colt. Paid $1 million for him. And then we ran a contest on Twitter to name him and got a really great name, Verifier, you know, because he's out of Ruby Trust. And so, you know, really, really nice participation by people, and they really enjoy. I think they enjoyed. I mean, people are like, "That's so nice of you to let us name one of your horses." But think about it now: everybody that participated in that, when Verifier runs, they're going to feel like they have a part of Verifier.
Yes. Right?
Yeah.
No, yes. They're going to feel like they're engaged with Verifier.
I feel like you're a man of the people. I really do. I mean, I feel like you're in this, but you're allowing people to participate with you. It's kind of what you just said, and I think that's a very big positive, John. And I think, I mean, from two people that have been in the industry for a long time, that have been doing this show for a long time, I just want to say I appreciate you coming in, the things that you're trying to do, and I hopefully we can help and hit your goals, and we'll be rooting for you. We're rooters anyway, but we'll be rooting for you for sure.
Look, I mean, I hope everybody's rooting for us because, I think we should, if I'm successful, it's going to encourage other people to come in and be
successful. Goes back to my first thought. Yeah, let's get other people like yourself.
People that want to root against me and people that want to say, and the other thing, there's a lot of people like, you don't have any experience. I've been betting on horses for 30 years. The industry is more than breeding. It's more than racing, training, jockeys. The horse players and the fans are a huge part of the industry. And I think it shows kind of a mindset that needs to change, and that we have to engage with the fans and the horse players in order to create the excitement that everybody wants in the game. And some of the simple things I'm doing, like these aren't difficult things. They're simple things that I'm doing are, providing a lot of that, opportunity, for people to be able to see that. And, if you guys saw the post I did about Ballydoyle, right?
Yeah.
In the videos, and people loved that. And so I was over there talking with MV, Magner and Aiden. And I told them, I said, guys, if y'all did a live stream of Aiden just out here doing his normal thing, you'd have 30,000 people watching it. And they just didn't think that that was important to people. And I'm like, no, it's Ballydoyle, you can't get on here unless you are doing business with Coolmore, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes,
or exactly. Unless you're in the training program for horsemen, so opening that up to fans, I think is huge. And so I asked them before I posted the videos, and they gave me permission, so I appreciate them letting me do that. But I think if some more of these kind of mystery players out there provide some access to people, I think, I think once you get positive momentum going, it can be contagious, just like negative momentum can be going. And that's why I'm all a negative this last Rapoli battle was, guys, I don't Zidane and all these guys, okay, you're out this year. You don't have to like it. It's just, that's the case. You can go through the court process. That's your constitutional right. But don't be writing open letters and trying to distract from everybody else, because there's people like Sheikh Fahad, who I think most people would tell you at Qatar Racing is just a really genuinely good person, right? Yeah. He's never won a Derby. Don't do anything to cheapen his win of the Derby. If Mike Rapoli wins it, is he going to want Zidane Racing going around saying, well, I only won it because Muth wasn't in there?
Right.
Well, Booth didn't qualify as a horse because he had a trainer that was not qualified. Just like if you didn't run a race and didn't qualify, you're not qualified. So nobody disqualified Muth. The owner should have not had the horse in a situation where it couldn't qualify for the Derby if he wanted to run in the Derby. We don't need to be talking about that. We need to be talking about all the good horses and all the good people that this is a culmination of their live stream and their career to win the Kentucky Derby. That's what we need to be talking about. And so that's why I just felt I had to respond to that, because that's not the commentary we need right now.
Valid points from a passionate man. Welcome to the industry, John. We appreciate you. And I look forward to seeing you out here in Lexington. If you're at Keeneland on Friday, let me know. We have three in. And by the way.
Yeah, I'm in Keeneland Friday afternoon. I have, I bought a horse, Her Holy Name from,
all right, I'm gonna come find you. I'll come find you and shake your hand, and maybe we'll share a beer.
Okay, sounds good.
John Stewart, thank you very much.
Thank you so much. We appreciate the time.
Yep, thank you guys.
Good luck. That's John Stewart here.
I love passion.
I mean, seriously, you can't fault the guy
for
his passion and what he's talking about. I mean, I think he's right. I think there's a lot of tongue in cheek with him and Rapoli, and they must enjoy it. I still don't think it's Rapoli, but I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. But it is John. He's typing those things. So, you know, what I just don't like is that, you know, the muckety mucks, the high and mighties are be like, oh, who's this guy, John Stewart? He thinks he knows everything. And he has no chance. He'll be out of the game in a year. Right. That's what you hear.
Yeah.
Why not just welcome the guy?
Yeah.
And say, hey man, come on in. Join the party. Thank you for buying these horses and for keeping them. I mean,
we talk about Light Up Racing and how we want people to kind of get in front of any kind of negative, and we want to open the doors and make racing more transparent. He's literally doing it boots on the ground, right? He did he didn't cancel their OBS, but he did do walk around his barn. I was on the live for that, and you got to see his horses, and he would go pet them, and like, it was really cool. You know, you don't get to go to people's farms, and you don't get to go with the owner, right? It's usually me walking around, something like that. So it was really cool. Like, and I appreciate it and applaud. We didn't get to hear what news he's going to. What do you think the news is going to be?
Forthright. And I thought he was telling, I think he was honest. And, you know, he feels like a man of the people. He's going to get a lot of fans. I can tell you that. There's going to be people that he's going to be polarizing, just like anybody who, you know,
anyone that's polarizing.
But I wish him the best of luck. I hope it works out, and I hope he's in this game for a long, long time. That's true.
Very good.
What's coming up at Santa Anita after our one-hour show that we just did?
Well, it was a very good show, though. Coming up at Santa Anita this week, what is coming up? Friday. We're going to be having nothing exciting on Friday, but Saturday, the 27th, is the Hot Wings trackside. It's the Frenchie Derby, which we all love. The Corgi races. I love the Frenchies because I obviously have a Frenchie. So I really like the Frenchie Derby. And also on Saturday, it's going to be Laughs and Lowriders. So if you've got a fancy schmancy car, then bring it on out. We're also going to be having a bunch of comedians as well. So Family Fun Zone going and some really cool stuff on the infield there. And then, of course, we're going to have big stuff coming up the week after for the Kentucky Derby. Oh, excuse me.
I was at Keeneland on Saturday and Sunday this week.
Yeah.
I mean, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. It was so crowded Saturday. It was like a Breeders' Cup day.
That's awesome.
And it wasn't even, you know, a big stake or anything. So
I'm just going to play devil's advocate. I'm going to say Keeneland's a lot smaller than Santa Anita is. Like, if you took all the people at Keeneland and stuck them at Santa Anita, it still wouldn't feel that busy.
I disagree. It was packed. Okay. It was when it rained there one day last week, everyone was just inside. It was packed inside. Like, it was amazing.
But the food is good. Have you had any bread pudding?
Yes, I did have bread pudding.
That is my favorite thing, is the bread pudding from the track.
I don't know what to do for dinner tonight. What should I have?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know what you've been eating.
I've been eating a lot of Whole Foods, a lot of DoorDash. I'm by myself. Yeah. By myself.
Well, you can go to my favorite Dudley's and sit at the bar. That's what I like to do.
All right, maybe I'll do that. All right, guys. Thank you for listening. Thank you for joining.
Speaking of Keeneland, by the way, we are thrilled to continue our partnership with Keeneland Racecourse. The 2024 meet is obviously in full effect and does go on through Friday, April 26th. So racing all the way through the rest of this weekend. And make sure you play the new 15% takeout rolling daily doubles, as well as the always low takeout turf pick threes. And I do believe Eric DeCoster is doing a daily Keeneland journal. So you can find that in the moneyinthemoneypodcast.com/+.
Okay. Amazing. Thank you, Michelle. Thank you, John Stewart.
Bye. Bye.